As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, the Knicks are dead and the Nets are victorious.
Wow.
Kevin Durant is a god. Oh, god. James Harden is back.
Wow. Shot out of a cannon.
Before we get started on today's show, the show is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com.
Drop heavy.
Mike Ayer, say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at NetsDaily.com. The Athletic, get yourself behind the paywall at TheAthletic.com/glue guys. Right,
Michael. The Nets are Let's back. Go.
The
Let's
Nets are back.
Go. You're fired up today.
They're you champions.
You had your Frappuccino, I can tell.
Got my 7-Eleven large. A large boy from 7-Eleven.
Are you doing just black? Are you Colombian. Doing 7-Eleven blackies?
No, I don't. Half and half. Come on.
All right.
I'm not. You know, I'm not
half cream, half coffee. Love it. Love that.
I'm basically dripping whipped cream at this point. Brian,
Michael,
the Nets won.
We did it. We did it. It wasn't
in hostile territory at the Clays,
dude. I hate that so much. That I mean,
the conversation,
like in the post game interview with James Harden. I forget who it was who did it, but she steps, pulls him aside, and is like, "Hey, did it feel like you're at a Knicks home game? Did it feel that way? Because so many
this obsession over the fact that Knicks
gonna be,
fans
because whatever you say, it's going
buy
in
tickets?
It's going in the can tomorrow. We're talking about it tomorrow. That's for sure.
Oh my lord, it's too much. And honestly. Like, that's the thing that these Knicks fans hold on to. They hold on to the fact that they had fans in the building. As a person who likes fun, I'm not a fun police. I'm a fun fire starter.
Oh, a fun arson.
I'm a fun arsonist.
Wow.
An arsonist of fun. I actually thought it was a great atmosphere in the Clays.
I know.
I heard back and forth.
Can we center in on that? How it's a battleground, you know? Like, sure,
it's
we
awesome.
Can, like, you know, MSG, we definitely need to push into their space a little bit more to
yes.
earn some respect for that, like, these are love is a battleground arguments. But I would like it to trend more in that direction because I didn't go last night, but I've been to those games, and it's by far the most fun basketball I've ever been to is Nets Knicks in Barclays Center, just because it's so testy. You'll be sitting next to, and you just form little cliques and enclaves and factions in your own section where you're yelling at people. It's super fun. It's great.
I love it. It's like Avengers Endgame when they all arrive outside, like the Avengers headquarters, and they have the battle in like the open field, just, you know, their practice fields for the Avengers. That's what Barclays feels like. You know, there's Thanos, the Knicks. I mean, I guess really the Nets are Thanos, if we're being honest, right? Like, we're the bad guys. We're the villains.
In a lot of ways,
But Thanos was right. I mean, that's kind of the thing, you know.
Like the 50% of the world needs to go?
Yeah. You know, well, not just the world, the universe.
The
universe. It was fun. Can we enjoy basketball for a moment? Yeah, the Nets, you know, they were the dominant team throughout most of the game, and then they let the Knicks come back, and that could be discouraging on some level. But this was a fun basketball game.
It was
high energy, both teams going at each other, role players stepping up. The James Johnson being the hero of the game is mind-boggling and mind-baffling to me that worked out. Like, we've seen the bad version of the role player driving to the hoop. Like, what was it, Bruce Brown in the playoffs against the Bucks?
Sure.
Like, remember he like drove to the hoop and it was disastrous. Yes. I supported him in that moment. Basketball play.
Still do. This day.
Always. Yeah. I rubber stamp all Bruce Brown moves. But James Johnson driving to the hoop to go for like the winning bucket and hitting the free throws.
Dude, James Johnson hits the big shots. He's got huevos for days, Mike.
Huevos rancheros.
He's got the rancheros going big time. meanwhile, it was like Alec Burks was getting so much airtime on the ESPN or the TNT broadcast. You would have thought, I was like, dude, I had to look. I was like, wait, is this the same like 11-year veteran Alec Burks?
Like, is this a new Alec Burks? Who has been like floating around the NBA forever, like, but now he's the starting point guard for your New York Knicks?
The maybe like shining example of averageness in the NBA, and like,
and God bless him.
God bless. You know, that's a storied, you know, average career. Great. You know, that's a lane. But you would have thought he was like, I guess it's because, you know, Kemba had been so publicly outed that they'd be like, guys, get excited. Here's the Kemba replacement. Fire it up.
Emergency press conference. Kemba Walker has been benched. That's what it felt like. The storylines going into the game were quite juicy because you had this Nets team that had been on a hot streak, then lost that game to the Suns and had lost previously to the Warriors. So it's like, hey, can they beat a good team while also benching Blake Griffin, right? Blake gets benched. Then the Knicks are like, hold my beer. We're going to bench the guy we just had this triumphant homecoming for in Kemba Walker. We're going to bench him and talk about how he's had a nice career. God.
Yeah.
Like, Tibbs, obviously, the funny thing is we kind of pull that quote. So Tibbs said, for those who don't know, he was asked about why Kemba was benched, essentially. He was like, yeah, he's still part of the team and he's had a nice career. It's like, oh, wow.
I know what was going on behind the scenes where they ended up on that as the, like, they were like, Tibbs was like, should we give him a full, like, Viking funeral? They're like, no, let's just do a press conference.
Let's send him out on a wooden boat in the Hudson River and fire a flaming arrow. which is the best way to die, right? Like, or best way to be buried.
It's asking a lot of your family to know how to shoot a flaming arrow, though. That's you know, that's where I lose. You know, I don't know anyone in my family who could hit my casket with a flaming arrow. Maybe I'm wrong.
The modern version of that is being placed into like a grocery cart in a Target and just being pushed down the aisle while someone shoots silly string at you. That's how I want.
That is a lo-fi Viking funeral. That is a budget.
Let's talk about basketball and the game.
Please.
It was not only was it a fun game, it was a really sort of compelling game of, you know, at the beginning of the game, James Harden looks like peak James Harden. What did he score? 28 points in the first half. He ends up with only 34, but he was ultra aggressive to start. Mm-hmm. KD was bad, and then it flipped in the second half.
Kevin Durant
was great, and James Harden didn't do anything.
Do you think, and I'm stealing this from, I think, Grace in the Discord, shout out to the Discord and the Dirty Stream, do you think Reggie Miller is going to get a ring if we win it this year? Do you think he gets a ring?
Explain the Reggie Miller thing.
So Reggie Miller in the broadcast, if for those who wasn't watching, basically, like, so James Harden starts out playing well. He hits a couple of shots, and he's looking aggressive.
Like a couple of step-back threes.
He's fired up. And Reggie begins to, like, adorn his cap with a feather and say, like, I pulled James Harden aside before this game, and I told him, be James Harden. I just slapped him around. I took him by the collar and I was like, "Wake up, damn it! Wake up!" It was like that scene in Robin Williams's Pan, you know, where he's like, "Remember who you are." He was.
You mean Hook?
Hook. God, what did I say? Pan.
Pan.
You know the movie he did about pans. Wow, Hook. Jesus, it's still early for me.
Peter Pan's Labyrinth.
Hook. Hook. Where the Hook's kids like dope. Remember who you are. Anyways, that's
wow. But also great. That is true.
Yeah,
Robin. Yeah, remember who you are and start eating out of the empty bowl and turn it into frosting.
Exactly.
I think in the food, they were basically all eating frosting, right?
Yeah, they're just eating globs of like blue mashed potatoes or something. Yeah, I don't know. Mashed potatoes is the food diet.
Which, as a fat kid, again, was my favorite scene in the movie.
It's big.
Undeniable.
People are, by the way, doubting your fat kid credentials. By the way, there is a lot of speculation in the
your
community.
Your boys were in shirts in the pool.
They think that you're pulling some kind of weird fat kid street cred card, and that you don't have the.
How dare they? How dare they? My mom. Hey, here's the credentials. Okay, here's the CV. If there was a LinkedIn for fat kids, here's a couple of items that I could put forward. Okay, here's my real tape. wore husky clothes as a child. They were called husky clothes. That's what they were called. I wore shirts in the pool, which is really like the ultimate
sign of
a fat kid.
That is the calling card. That's the calling. That's a prerequisite.
I wrestled in a league where it was first grade through eighth grade. All ages were in it. It just depended on your weight, which is what wrestling is. I was the heavyweight wrestler first through eighth grade as a fifth grader. I was the heavyweight. I was the biggest kid on my wrestling team.
I didn't mean to call it into question.
I was
just
in
saying
the unlimited weight class.
There are people in Glue Nation who are speculating wildly.
You dirty
I'm not saying it's
discorders.
I'm not
How
saying
dare
it's fair. Anyways, so Reggie Miller pulled Robin Williams aside and they ate mashed potatoes. I forget what we're talking about. So Reggie Miller was basically like, I pulled James Harden aside and I fixed his game. I made him. I adjusted his mental state to the point where he was an elite scorer. And then James Harden basically confirmed this in the press conference afterwards. He was like, "Dude, Reggie Miller like set me straight." I don't know. He like hypnotized him into I don't know what kind of juju magic spell that Reggie Miller was casting. But you know, I need some of that. I think we could all use a little pep talk from Reggie Miller to start the day.
Yeah, but if Reggie Miller was like, "You are Mike Smeltz," like, yeah. It's not that good. You know, it's like saying that to James Harden. You are James Harden. Be like, "Oh, shit, yeah, I'm one of the greatest offensive guards of all time." You are Mike Smeltz. It's like, okay, well,
yeah, T-shirt in the pool. Great. Yeah.
Middling. Like- the other juicy element of this is the fact that, of course, Reggie has this fantastic history with the Knicks. He has stabbed the Knicks fan base in the heart so many times as a player. There's literally an entire documentary about how Reggie Miller has murdered the Knicks, and he's done so in very public ways in front of Spike Lee. We all know the history. And in this battle of the boroughs, Reggie decides to send his magical Knicks killing powers to James Harden as if it was Space Jam, and Reggie inserted his essence into the basketball and gave it to James Harden to turn him into a monstar once again. And it was real. Like, I don't know how much to credit Reggie Miller, though. Obviously, James Harden, as you said so. That first half, that was pure, distilled. I was about to say uncut, but if you're distilled and uncut, that doesn't really make sense. James Harden. It was aggression, driving to the hole. I mean, I think the thing is, and he said this, Reggie Miller said this on the broadcast, is that James has had issues with trying to figure out when to be distributor bro and when to be scorer bro. He came out and was just, I'm going to be Luka Doncic, old James Harden scorer guy. And it was really effective. Now, the other thing about it, though, Bri, is that Kevin Durant had his worst half of the season to start. And so what I wonder is that, like, Kevin Durant has been so amazing this year and so efficient, and that James Harden really has kind of been, like, off and on. This was the first time I remember seeing James Harden, particularly in that first half, where he was just electric and fully in control. I wonder, can they be in control together? Like, can they both be peaked together Or does one or the other kind of have to take a back seat for at least a quarter or a half for the other guy to be ultra dominant? Yeah. Like, we just because James hasn't been that good this year, I don't know if that's it's one case. It's one data point where we see James Harden play well and Kevin Durant not play well. I just wonder if that's like kind of the thing. So that we can they both be dominant and efficient if they're not like controlling the ball to a certain degree?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there hasn't been a lot of evidence to suggest that they like complement each other as, you know, as much as one would hope. Like having, we sit up and watched the Suns Warriors games after this, and it was really, really interesting to watch. Just, you know, we had a long conversation. This kind of goes back to like some old conversations we used to have on the show about Kevin Durant's taking issue with the Warriors as like playing the beautiful game and all their BS. And then when it actually came down to winning playoff series, they were like, KD, please go get a bucket for us, for God's sakes. Like, we can't we can't set five more screens for Steph Curry here. Like, we have to just score this bucket. And he was like, nobody talked about how much like usage, like I was taking up in the playoffs. And like, it was still like beautiful game. Steve Kerr's a genius. Meanwhile, it was go get a bucket KD time. In many ways, I'm wondering if like we're just kind of not doing the pretense of like playing, you know, anything but sort of like playoff basketball, even in the regular season. Like, you know, like we're just not like, and also, you know, because of our personnel limitations too, like a lot of our offensive weapons, you know, not going to talk about touch football here. I promised I wouldn't. Jeez. I wouldn't. A lot of our weapons are not there. So, like, you know, a lot of the offseason, this is stuff that we were talking about in the Discord as well, like, you know, our defensive. So it's interesting that, like, all of a sudden we have, like, a way better defense and offense just based on our roster. That wouldn't make a ton of sense. But, like, is it worth it to implement, like, a super cool offensive system that you'll eventually abandon because when when the playoffs come, you're just going to like probably take turns doing the thing that we're doing right now, which is like offensive set with James Harden, offensive set with KD. I think the only issue with it is, I don't think it's like necessarily problematic. The only issue is that we're getting our butts wiped off the floor by good teams at the moment. And, you know, I think like, I don't know that, do you trust that evidence going into the playoffs? Like, there's some, like, you kind of do want to see some version of a comprehensive offense just to know that you could do it to, like, win regular season games, that, like, Nash has the ability to, like, orchestrate.
Well, he does.
I
mean, I think last year the team had a fairly beautiful offense, and that, you know, they did share the ball really well, even, like, the short period of time when we actually had Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. I mean, I remember the shows that we had. I was super impressed by how all of their ability to all get off the shots that they wanted while sharing the ball. Like, Harden particularly really sacrificed when he came over to Brooklyn to be the point guard, when famously Kyrie Irving was like, I'll be the two guard, you be the point guard, James.
Yeah.
And Kyrie sacrificed by not being the main ball handler, and James sacrificed by giving up the ball more than he normally would. This version of this team, I don't know the numbers on pick and roll. We could look it up as we go about the show, but they don't really run pure pick and roll that was like all the rage in the NBA for so many years leading up to now. I think teams are shifting a little bit off pick and roll, just a little bit. And I think what ultimately it is just a product of who they have. Kevin Durant is the best ISO player in the league. James Harden's a top five ISO guy in the league. LaMarcus Aldridge is a guy who, like, he doesn't like fit into a flow of an offense, move the ball. He's like, I get the ball, I'm going to put it up from, you know, 15 feet. Mm-hmm. Patty Mills is the shifty guy who's making a lot of plays, shooting threes and all that stuff. And Ben Bridges is, you know, he's not ever going to be involved in an offense. I think if you just go down the line, they just don't have a team that is like, they don't need the Warriors system,
yeah,
ultimately. I do think they should, like, if Nick Claxton gets back and he actually starts playing, we're going to see more pick and roll, because he's the one guy who's a pick and roll big.
We were actually going like deep diving on this last night and looking at like passes, like pass rate by team. And the Warriors obviously like lead the league by a pretty wide margin. But the Phoenix Suns are right there with the Brooklyn Nets at the bottom two and three worst, or like least passes per game teams, which is interesting because I was actually thinking about like drawing kind of an unfortunate comparison between Chris Paul and James Harden, as like, now that Chris Paul is 36, will turn 37 this year. his like speed is somewhat limited by, you know, you can kind of tell it's diminished slightly. And the way that he does most of his damage is just by getting his first guy on his hip and then like kind of living in that weird, awkward space between having the rim protector guy step up and guard him from the mid range and then having the other guy like stay on his hip and like try to come over. And it just creates a whole lot of weird tension for the defense. It just makes everyone feel ill at ease. And like Harden is a, would be like really spectacular at that. He's still looking for his drive as though he's 29 and that's like his primary thing. But I would like, I don't know, it's weird to be like, hey, James Harden, I encourage you to like watch some tape of somebody because, you know, you probably know more than I do. Yeah. But like, I would say like,
we should email his people about that.
Yeah. But like, it did occur to me that it was like, you know, Chris Paul has athletic like limitations based on what he was 10 years ago or whatever. Or 5 years ago, and that it might be like time for James Harden to start looking at that as a way to break down defenses a little bit more pragmatically than what he's been doing.
Yeah, but I will say, I'm looking up numbers as we talk. The Nets are second in the NBA in assist percentage, which means
so that's what's really interesting. They have a super high passes that lead to assists, but low overall passes, which is interesting.
Yeah, so it's very efficient form of passing, right? It's they are the most efficient passing team. The Warriors are number one with 71% of assist percentage is the amount of shots you make that come from assist over the course of the game. So if you're 71%, 2/3 of the shot you make during the game have been assisted to you.
Well, there's other, I thought you were looking at this other stat, which is interesting too, which is assists to pass percentage, meaning which percentage of passes actually led to an assist. So like you can have a bunch of empty passes, you know, hockey assists or whatever. And so you can have like a ton of passes that don't actually lead to an assist. And the Nets rank really, really high, as do the Phoenix Suns, in the assist to pass percentage metric, which is a really interesting thing. So basically it's like James Harden does one pass away and Kevin Durant shoots it. You know, that's like basically the offense. You know.
Yeah. So again, though, I think the team itself is, it is this very weird thing because we haven't seen them beat a really good team.
Yeah.
But the Knicks game, I think this best crystallizes maybe how Knicks fans feel. This is from, Brian sent this to me. This is from Worldwide Wob, right? What's his name? Rob Perez.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, the guy on Twitter who has the Adam Silver meme as his Twitter profile. Very funny on Twitter. He's a huge Knicks fan. And this is what he said after the game. Someone sent this to us, and I think it is emblematic of what it's like to be a Knicks fan watching the Nets in their current state.
Every single time the Knicks go to Brooklyn, this same shit happens down the stretch that it becomes Julius Randle versus Kevin Durant, and you can't win that. How is this guy so good? Made that shit look easy. And the most frustrating part is there's nothing that we could do about it.
That's what a baby.
Yeah.
what a child.
Yeah.
no. But great analysis, because it's true. Like, the difference between the two teams at this point, there's a lot of differences. But the Knicks are relying on Alec Burks, the greatest point guard in Knicks history, and Julius Randle. Julius Randle's fantastic, versus the Nets relying on James Harden and Kevin Durant. That was evident in the game.
I will say, like, there is kind of a This is a normal thing for Knicks fans, but like a little bit of a reality check. You should be kind of excited to be that in that deep and that close with this. I hate to say, but like, you know,
I say
this with no prejudice.
You should be thankful to just lose by two.
Yeah, I mean that honestly with no prejudice. Like, that's, you know, be glad that it was an exciting game. That's, you know, because that's where you guys are. That's fine. That's where you are in your trajectory. We've been there. You know, we're just different
now.
We were
there, like, 5 years ago.
5 years ago.
We'll let you know how it tastes in our area. You keep enjoying your. I'm going to reference the two roll sushi lunch. We're over here at Nobu.
Yes.
Eating that fine.
That's right.
And you guys
eating
are
the fine.
Eating the fine. There were a couple of massive developments in the game, and we're going to talk about it coming up after the break. I'm just going to give you a hint of who we're going to discuss. Cam Thomas, because we got to talk about Cam Thomas.
Please, let's.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
And we're back, Brian. Cam Thomas, the young prepubescent point guard that is on this team, has but definitely risen.
Checking his T levels, you know.
He is having himself a little run here. Mm. In the past four games, three of them he's been in double digits. He's been getting, starting with that at Cleveland game on last week, it's 15 minutes, 25 minutes, 12 minutes, and 21 minutes now against the Knicks. 11 points, 13 points, 3 points against the Suns. That was a sad game. Then 12 points against the Knicks. What I love, so he's 5-for-9 from the field. He is really trying to play sort of fit within the flow of the offense, fit within the hierarchy of the floor when he's out there. I think he was the first sub put in the game by Steve Nash in this Knicks game. Like, it wasn't just like mop-up duty
And that's been the case for the last like three games now.
He was put in. He's really trying to – he goes to the corner. He waits in the corner. If he gets the ball, he had two catch-and-shoot threes, which we joked about in Summer League. Like, I just want to see – like, I watched all the Cam Thomas tape I could get my hands on. I lapped it up like your cat Magneto and a bowl of warm milk.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't like milk. Won't eat human food at all. Doesn't do it. Not any kind of human food.
Not even tuna? Not a tuna fan?
Not even tuna. Not even a gourmet sesame encrusted seared tuna steak. won't touch it.
Yeah. Speaking of sushi. But Cam really doesn't shoot. He never got an open shot. A catch and shoot at LSU because he just had the ball all the time and he would put it up from mid-range or from three. He took wide open threes that he hit. He was 2-for-5 from three and he's really working hard to fit in and played a little defense. He had a great steal, like intercepted a pass. He was guarding at times Julius Randle because the Knicks kept switching KD onto the ball handler and Cam would switch onto Randle and then Randle would get the ball. I am loving what I'm seeing out of Cam. I mean, it shows next level awareness, a self-awareness that I didn't think we would see his rookie year. I don't want to go too crazy, but what have you seen from Cam'Yule Thomas?
Yeah, I agree. It's he's showing the willingness to adapt to playing with some of the most elite offensive weapons the game has ever seen, Michael. I will say, like, there's still I love him a lot, and I think like I can kind of see into his brain. He's overcooking his jump shot a little bit. It's a little new to him. He's holding X kind of too long. There's too much lift on the shot, and the mechanics start to get overwrought. In general, like each game, you can see like we're building towards that breakout moment. There seems like it's just almost gonna have the big, you know, 30-point game. Like it's really just it's like two or three games away. It's somewhere right up close.
Let's look at the schedule coming. Let's divine the Cam Thomas breakout moment. So they play. They have a nice long break here. They're off today on Wednesday, off on Thursday in a home game against the Timberwolves on Friday. Then they play a back-to-back. They play at home again to the Bulls on Saturday night. Then they go on a four-game road trip at Dallas, at Atlanta, at Detroit. At Dallas, at Houston,
at Atlanta, at Detroit.
You know what it is.
I think it's that Houston game.
Of course. Of course. It's gotta be.
It's on a back-to-back, I think. Yeah, it's on a back-to-back, Dallas, then Houston. That's where maybe James Harden sits because maybe he doesn't want to play in Houston. I would not blame him for not wanting to get yelled at by everyone in Houston about But
you think he's going to sage it? He could sage it.
They can fly Kyrie in for that game specifically.
To the sage man.
He's being paid quite well.
That's true.
Least he could ward off the bad spirits. That's like that game is, hey, can we get 35 minutes of Cam Thomas? Let him put up 25 shots.
I think things are building towards that. I think if I had to guess, that's the one. Let's circle it. Let's put some money down.
The coolest thing about Cam is that you can tell KD and Harden like generally like they are really invested in his growth.
It's their son. They got together. They had a boy and his name was Cam.
You know, when you watch Shark Tank, I don't know if you watch Shark Tank, but you could tell sometimes the sharks aren't, they like the bottom line. They like the revenue generated from a new business, but they don't really care about the story of the entrepreneurs that are being presented in front of them.
Sure.
Cam is like that single mom who comes in front of the sharks. She put all of her money in designing a new bottle for toddlers to drink out of, and it's selling like hotcakes in her small town.
Right.
But she really needs that distribution push. And Mark Cuban and Lori, they really get invested in that single mom. And yeah, they're going to put their money behind it, but they're really going to put their energy into that business to take it to the next level.
Totally.
That's Kevin Durant and James Harden looking at Cam Thomas and saying, you, my friend, you have talent. You have a growth potential, and I'm going to invest part of my soul into you. And I want to see you grow. Because that's Cam. Because there's like Alex Schiffer of The Athletic. And if you haven't yet, Alex wrote a really great story about LaMarcus Aldridge. LaMarcus really talking about his sort of the medical issues that he had with his heart and coming back and now being obviously a huge contributor for the Nets. You can find that story on The Athletic. Get yourself behind that paywall at theathletic.com/glueguys. Alex tweeted out a video of Cam Thomas and Kevin Durant, the last two guys at practice, working on their shots together. I'm going to say this, bold statement. It's going to be impactful in Cam Thomas's career if he actually listens to KD and Harden, you know? And I think he is. He's like, it's going to be matter for growth. And I think they recognize in him that if they can slowly bring him along this season, he's going to matter at certain points when they are going to need him in the playoffs, right? Like he's not Kyrie, right? He's never going to do what Kyrie's doing, but he's going to be in this. He's going to be that like mix of role players like Patty Mills and LaMarcus Aldridge potentially, who can score 18 in a playoff game and like shift the balance of that game.
That's the goal.
Drastically. Because we don't know. I mean, this team does need that. What would you say like this team is lacking at this point from personnel? Because to me, it is that like third scorer bro who is more of a guard oriented. I know Patty Mills can do it, but Patty's like, Patty's very good. But like, I think more of like a traditional like ISO bucket getter off the bench.
I'll be saying this a lot, and I think I've said it in previous episodes, but it'll start to become a meme. Two needs that are already on the friggin' roster that we don't have access to, but two needs. One, super penetration scorer, bro.
Yep.
A.K.A. Voldemort. Two, Nick Claxton's pick-and-roll partner for James Harden. You know, these are the things. Just to fully get all the best, all of what you can get out of James Harden, he does require a springy center kind of position, bro, roller. We have him. Apparently, Nick Claxton's coming back. He's been practicing with the Long Island Nets. Little article passed around. So eager to see what he looks like when he comes back. I don't know that we need to make personnel moves, but we have under contract some guys who could be there. So we shall see. We shall see, Mike.
Before we get to a wonderful email from Sean, good friend of the show, anything else from the game that we think we forgot to talk about and that we should chew on? I mean, obviously, Kevin Durant destroyed Julius Randle's ankles. That's cool.
Do we want to talk about the, like, burgeoning Paul Millsap versus Blake Griffin controversy?
How do you see that controversy?
Well, I see it as, we talked about this in the Discord and on the stream last night. You think you want... You're like, oh, man, like Paul's not looking great at the moment. Like, I would love it if maybe we could get some Blake Griffin, and then it's like, oh wait, Blake Griffin, get some Paul Millsap. I feel bad about the Blake Griffin situation because like I do still think that there's like a prominent role for Blake. I don't know exactly what it is given his current sort of, you know, limitations, but I'm not sure how I'm feeling about Paul Millsap's minutes right now. Like, I'm not super duper enjoying
it. I have to give him more time.
There's got to be more time.
I mean, because he just hasn't been given a consistent role. And like, I'm looking at his minutes now. I mean, I guess he like fairly recently he's getting between 10 to 17, 19 minutes a game. But it can't continually go up and down.
Dude, look at his numbers in November. They're atrocious. I mean, I'm treading lightly about this, but like he's shooting 30% from the field, 20% from three. Like,
well, now he's shooting 26% from the field.
Okay.
After going 0-for-3 from last night.
There you go. So his numbers right now are heinous, but you know, I have no doubt that can trend back upwards. I was trying to compare like the end of last season to the season, and he was kind of like not looking great at the end of last season either. Like just looking at his numbers. So I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I think he was a good signing at the time. I don't think Paul Millsap is burnt toast. I don't think he's dead. Okay, I you got to see a little bit more because he was pretty good last year. Yes, he declined at the end of last season with the Nuggets, but he was fairly okay. And I don't think Blake should be banished to the hinterlands of the Gowanus Canal. Like, I don't think he should be dipped into the toxic waters of the Gowanus.
Why are we banishing? We do full banishments a little. Like, that's our – I mean, we're Alec Burking – or no, Kemba Walkering people, like, left and right here. And, you know, it's – we can slowly phase people in and out. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. But I guess with Nash, it's like – it's an all or nothing kind of deal.
I still love that Blake talked to DeAndre Jordan about how they handle really benching.
It is really good.
It's like, like, he is the sage. Because if I'm being honest, like Blake was horrible on shooting, but I did like what he could do, sort of like setting screens and being the rugged guy. And on defense, he has no verticality, he has no real rim protection, but he would take charges. He would, you know, he was a burly, grumpy guy to deal with for teams. He was kind of the enforcer on the Nets. I don't know. The thing that's going to be real interesting to me. So LaMarcus Aldridge played 32 minutes in this game. Obviously, now that he's starting, his minutes are going to increase just for the simple fact that he's going to be starting games and he's going to be ending games. He's fully going to be, I mean, he's going to be a starter essentially in minutes, slightly diminished, but he's going to get around like 28 minutes a game. Now, what does it look like when Nick Claxton comes back? How many minutes is he going to get? Because, you know, if Nick Claxton comes back and actually looks like how he should look, meaning not a disaster, I don't know if we're going to see much Paul Millsap, much Blake Griffin at all after that fact. Because James Johnson, I don't know how you feel, power rank these. Paul Millsap, James Johnson, Blake Griffin. James Johnson's number one.
He's one by, like, head and shoulders number one at this point, which is crazy to say, but yeah.
Yeah, I think he's like, you know, I don't want to, no one's like too firm on the rotation, but he feels pretty firm. He closed the game.
He's been closing multiple games, and he hits big shots. Like, this is not the first time he, like, you know, has kind of hit timely threes. it's a thing that he does, which is this is a complaint that I've had with Joe Harris, like, constantly. Like, he just doesn't hit big threes. He, like, you know, will hit five of the most, like, forgettable threes over the course of a game, and obviously it all counts towards the point total, but it's like, I would love a little like momentum three for you, Joe. And it seems like James Johnson only hits those. Like, he'll go 1-for-4 and I'll remember the 1-3 hit and be like, you're awesome.
His move to the bucket at the end of the game to win the game for the Nets
was going to be a disaster.
The slow motion look on his face was like, I'm doing this. I'm doing it.
I mean, I credit to him for like appraising the situation correctly. Cause like, you know, he really didn't have anywhere to go. And like to the Knicks' credit, but for Mitchell Robinson's, you know, artless, you know, spastic hands, they would have closed that perfectly on that defensive set, but Mitchell Robinson spazzed out and the rest is history. But James Johnson's knew that he had to do the thing. He was like, I guess I'm going to be a hero in this moment. You know,
it's that look you're at when you're at the bar and someone gives you the shot, like you're already five beers deep and then someone pushes a shot your way. You're like, yes, I'm doing it.
Taking over the
edge. Going to the hole.
Yeah.
I'll defend Mitchell Robinson here. I know he looks like a silly defender for fouling so egregiously James Johnson when, like, you should just take the percent chance of doing verticality, as Reggie Miller was saying. Mitchell Robinson was front guarding LaMarcus Aldridge away from him trying to get the ball. LaMarcus Aldridge is in position to get a bucket. If Mitchell Robinson fully commits and goes straight up against James Johnson, I'm actually confident in James Johnson's ability to then dump it off real quick to LaMarcus, and LaMarcus scores. Like, Mitchell Robinson was in a bad place.
I agree.
He was left in a bad place.
I agree he's in a bad place, but also, like, he just...
Like, terrible foul.
Did a terrible thing.
He did a bad place, bad thing.
He did a bad thing. Just
he did a bad thing.
We should do that. That could be a little drop. Yeah. Should we go to the emails, Mike?
Let's go to the emails.
Do you want to tee me up?
Yeah.
Next up, Cheer Boy. That's... Sean Goodfriend. A good friend of the pod, Mike. We called him out in the last episode. He took it to heart and said, hey, guys, I appreciate the call out for not sending an email in a while. I've got a fun piece of Nets trivia as well as a couple Kyrie trades for you. Trivia. So, full disclosure, I actually already know the answer to this because I immediately upon receiving the email went to the bottom to see how long it was, and then without any context saw the answer. So I know the answer to this, but Mike, this can be trivia for you. Who was the last Net who was drafted by the team, played their entire rookie contract with the team, and was re-signed by the Nets?
Wow. Okay. Caris LeVert?
Tough to put you on a spot.
Caris definitely was drafted. He definitely got an extension with the team, and then they traded his Tookus to Indiana.
Doesn't count. He needs to resign, not have an extension, I guess, is the qualifier here.
And was resigned by the Nets. I don't know then.
It's Brook Lopez. Brook Lopez. Stumped the Smelts.
I don't know if
play stumped the
Smelts. Why would an extension not qualify?
We'll fact check this.
I think it's Caris LeVert.
And
sorry, Sean.
And this will add to
Sean already hates me. Let's just be honest. Hates you.
I don't know.
He thinks I steal his takes, and now he's not going to email. But I think it's Caris LeVert would be the
okay.
Right,
so he says here are two Kyrie trades, and this is going to get into Kyrie trade talk. So bear with us here, but we'll blast through this. It'll be fun. We'll make it fun. The first one is with the Kings. While I doubt Kyrie would be a happy camper on the Kings, their front office is crazy, so they just might do it. Also, Kyrie could opt out after the season, which would make any trade tricky. Trade one, Nets get Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley, Lotto protected first pick, Kings get Kyrie. There's an explanation for it, but Mike, hot takes, how do you like it?
So the one thing, I really don't want Marvin Bagley. Marvin Bagley's the move the Nets would made 5 years ago when Sean Marks was starting out and they were just desperate for talent. Mm. Marvin Bagley's dad is wild on Twitter. He's like really defending his son, which is what I would do. You know, we kind of make fun of sports parents who are vocal about their kids. If I see my boy Rowan get pushed down on the playground, I go up to the kid that pushed him and I kick him in the butt. You know, I'm full bore crazy stage sports dad. So I understand it, but Marvin Bagley's dad is that. And you don't really want that from who is Marvin Bagley at this point? He is a role player. Mm. So you don't want that. Buddy Hield, I just looked up Buddy Hield's stats. He's pretty tidy, 37% from three. He's taking a high volume, obviously a really good shooter. But he's not good on defense. So then you're going to get in a situation where I support getting Buddy Hield if then you move Joe Harris for Jonas Valanciunas. Or no, but Joe Harris to, I don't know, the Indiana Pacers for Miles Turner. Like, I support sort of that transaction. Mm-hmm. I agree completely that the Kings would definitely consider it. But the thing is, then the Kings would have De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton, and Davion Mitchell, the guy they just took. They would have four point guards on their roster. They already have too many point guards. So it's a little wobbly.
Explanation, he says he'll get next to Kyrie roll along Harden, blah, blah, blah. But so he says this trade only goes through if the Kings get assurances from Kyrie that he plays for them. If that were the case, the Kings probably throw in a lotto protected first or two. Further to that he re-signs with them. I mean, like, there's a whole lot of, you know, contingencies on this thing that are by no means certain. I don't think, you know, I don't think here's the issue, and this is why I think his second trade is more likely. It's that, like, we actually need to get some negative value things back in any Kyrie trade, just because there's just truly know. It's just such a unknown quantity what he will or won't do.
Yeah.
So like why? So his second trade is Cursed Apps, Porzingis, Trey Burke, and a 2022 first for Kyrie. So I think the Porzingis thing is interesting because also Porzingis is playing kind of well this season so far, although he just got hurt again a little bit. He sprained his ankle 2 days ago. But
look at you with that news.
Well, that's only because now that it's 4 weeks into fantasy, I actually start like paying attention. So now I'm going to know a few things about injury comings and goings. So they don't love Porzingis. Obviously, there was a whole lot of memes about how he was like basically unplayable in the playoffs last year. You know, I don't know if they still feel that way. He is like he's had just before he got hurt there had a real good streak. So it's possible that they still see him as negative value, but it's possible they don't. And in this case, I think like Porzingis is maybe the only dude who's like actually super realistic and that like there's some ceiling worth trading for Kyrie. Plus also like, you know, it doesn't matter if Kyrie comes back or not because like they're going to get him off the books if that's what they want.
Yeah. So this is a very compelling trade and I'm going to tease an episode that's going to be upcoming, but we talked about this before, Kyrie conundrum. We're going to really dive. We're going to look at every player in the NBA of like the Kristaps Porzingis level, talking about that salary that you could flip Kyrie Irving for because we just don't know if Kyrie's going to come back. This team, the Brooklyn Nets, needs to do something and get some amount of value for Kyrie if he cannot come back this year because he refuses to get vaccinated and the city decides not to change the mandates, though we don't know. I mean, there's obviously we talk about what's going to happen in the future, not to be too depressing. There's this Omicron variant. Like, we just don't know. There's a lot of factors that, as Nets podcasters, we're not, like, equipped to Omicron. Really predict the future on. Even though I think I'm an Achilles expert, I am not an epidemiologist. I do know Achilles very well, but I don't
know.
You
got time, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. I'm working on it. Here's what's interesting about the Porzingis-Kyrie swap. Okay, we know Kevin Durant at one point loved Kristaps Porzingis. He gave him the name Unicorn. Like he was the guy who blessed Kristaps and called him the Unicorn. It was thought at one point when KD wanted to go to the Knicks that Kristaps was part of the reason why he wanted to go. And then obviously we know what happened after that. Porzingis and Luka, they don't get along. It doesn't really matter. I don't think there's any animosity, but they just don't get along. Right. The team as constructed is fine for the Dallas Mavericks. But if I'm Dallas, there was rumors this offseason that they wanted to get rid of Kristaps anyways. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a perfect damaged asset swap. If you're not going to get anything for Kyrie, if he's not going to play for you this year, Kristaps is a nice consolation prize. We know that the Nets were interested in Kristaps when the Knicks traded Kristaps to Dallas. There were reports that the Nets were trying to shove into that trade package and trying to get Kristaps themselves. Didn't happen. A lot of teams maybe wanted Kristaps, but only the Mavericks got him. The other interesting thing about this, the new guy who runs the Dallas Mavericks, I think his name is Nico Harrison. Nico Harrison used to be one of the top executives at Nike. The reason why he was hired by the Mavericks is because of his relationships with players, his understanding of the current NBA, because if you're one of the top guys at Nike, particularly in basketball, you basically know every NBA player on a personal level already. You, Brian, on our YouTube stream, and if you, your background right now is a picture of Blake, James Harden, is that Paul Millsap?
It is Paul Millsap.
Well, how did he get in there?
I don't know. It should be LaMarcus, of course.
KD and Kyrie, and Kyrie's wearing a headband that has a big Nike swoosh on it. Kyrie is one of Nike's biggest clients. I'm going to guarantee that Kyrie has some personal relationship with Nico Harrison. I will also say, we know that Kyrie is and was a Brooklyn or a New Jersey Nets fan growing up. Who was the point guard for those New Jersey teams? Jason Kidd. Where's Jason Kidd now? The head coach, Dallas. So if there's this concern of, hey, I don't know if this guy will re-sign with the team type deal, I think Dallas is one of those few teams where like Kyrie can maybe feel comfortable in because of Jason Kidd, because of, I would think, his relationship with the new Mavs, you know, executive. And if Luka needs anything, he actually needs a guy like Kyrie next to him so that they can, like, there's some load taken off his plate. Kyrie has already shown he can play with a ball-dominant guard in James Harden. He played with LeBron James, who's basically a ball-dominant guard. It makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels. And they don't give a shit about vaccines in Texas. They don't care.
No, they don't.
They actually dislike vaccines in Texas. The governor has specifically tried to basically get schools to not force vaccines. I think there's literal court cases over it. So Kyrie would fit in Dallas from the Nets side, Brian, again. It's kind of sad to downgrade from Kyrie Irving, one of the most electric ball-handling scoring guards in NBA history, to Kristaps, who is damaged. But Kristaps is, like, pretty good. He's been a fairly good soldier in fitting in as the second guy behind Luka. He's already played, you know, he's played with that. I think Kristaps would come over to Brooklyn and be excited to play with Kevin Durant and James Harden.
Until James Harden starts pulling him aside and dogging him for his defense, which is guaranteed to happen.
But, so this is what's interesting. Let's say they did this. Kristaps is back is starting over LaMarcus, right? And is that problematic? Like, ooh, is LaMarcus
Twin
player,
Towers? What are we talking about? We're going Twin Towers out here.
You mean triple towers? Because KD, yeah. LaMarcus, and Kristaps on the floor.
Give me this.
I just want to update people on. So at one point we thought about Kristaps as this like 3-point bombing big, right? And when he was his year before he tore his ACL, he's shooting 39, basically 40% from three on five attempts a game for the Knicks. Now his 3-point percentage is 31%. He's shooting 5.5 attempts a game. Now his career average is 36%, which is league average. He's really not this great 3-point shooter that we believed. Because I think, again, it was kind of the shock and awe.
Brook Lopez territory.
Yeah, he's a fine 3-point shooter. Now he's going to get a lot of open looks with the Nets. But he's a stretch-ish big. His 2-point field goal percentage is back up to 53% from two, which is a really good sign. He's a very good free throw shooter. He is a good rebounder. He is a deterrent at the rim. Can I just say an exciting lineup of James Harden, Joe Harris, Kevin Durant, Kristaps, Patty Mills. Like that's fun.
It's fun.
That's a lot of shooting. It's a pretty devastating team. James would get his pick and roll dude.
Yeah.
It would also let you trade Nick Claxton for something because you don't need Nick Claxton if you have Kristaps. Do you like it?
So in general, like I'll take any trade at this point for Kyrie, you know, barring his comeback. Obviously the comeback is preferred. Please, you know, for any insiders who have an ear, who have Kyrie's ear, you know, do what you can. Make this thing happen because he's really an important part of this whole situation. And it would be unfortunately a big downgrade to go with Porzingis, but you know, he's kind of putting a gun to management's head on this thing and like daring us to say like, you know, can you, it's just it's an unfortunate position to be in for like Sean Marks, like not knowing what he's going to do, if he's going to come back and without any assurances, you have to do it. So ideally we would get Kyrie back in lieu of that. I'm open to the Porzingis idea. I think it's a pretty good get if we can do it.
Yeah, and like I'm not under the illusion that he's going to be this awesome defensive force for this team, because the reason why he can't play in playoff series at times is because he's not as switchy as he was. He's bulked up over, you know, trying to be a switchy, like slender man. I would trust Sean Marks in this. Like I would trust his scouting because he's always been a very good scout of big men. And I would trust the fact if he thinks that Kristaps can contribute to this team on a high level, then you make the trade. The other good thing about it is like Kristaps makes slightly less money than Kyrie. And it also helps with getting you get out of the question of like, do you have to give Kyrie a contract? Because there's a real threat that Kyrie just walks at the end of this year and you get nothing for him. So the Nets get out of that and they actually get to use that salary space sort of in the way that the Warriors signed D'Angelo Russell. They got him for basically his salary to then use in a separate trade down the road. The Nets can get Kristaps Porzingis
because Kristaps still has next year, and then there's a player option after that, which you think Kristaps is going to take. It gives the Nets flexibility down the road to get a third star in a different sense if they want to do that.
Well, Mike,
it's interesting.
It is interesting. We did it again. We said we were going to do a short show, and we went an hour. So let's
God bless us.
The gift of gab. But all good things must come to an end. So let's wrap her up.
God bless you all. The Nets have they dominate the Knicks, and that was to be expected. And they have a great schedule coming up, and we'll be potting much more as the season goes on. What a great
love
tease.
Love it. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody. Bye. At BK Glue Guys. Check out scarykittles.com for merch. At Athletic Get Behind the Paywall. Discord invites in the YouTube description and in the Twitter bio. Bye.